We're a little short of, we need two more members to have an official quorum, but we'd like to begin in the interest of time. They should be showing up shortly. Otherwise, we'll go find them, right? So we'd like to begin our hearing today. We have both the Minsky system here at the University of Minnesota. I thought of a coin flip, but we didn't need one because they agreed, I guess because we said you're first. I don't know how that worked out. But we're going to move along. We have a lot of testifiers today and a lot of information to be shared. So to begin with, I'd like to welcome Mr. Beckage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're the kind of the lead person here. So why don't you begin? Again, identify yourself for the record, and then we'll proceed.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Norris, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here with you today. For the record, I am Michael Beckage, Chair of the Board of Trustees of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. And with me here today for the presentation, to my right is Chancellor Stephen Rosenstone, Laura King, who's a Vice Chancellor of Finance and Chief Financial Officer, and then Brian Yolitz, who's the Associate Vice Chancellor of Facilities. Also be joining us a little later will be from Metropolitan State University, President Devinder Malhotra, and Bruce Beiser, the Interim Chief Financial Officer. And from Anoka-Ramsey County College and Anoka Technical College, President Kent Hansen and Donald Lewis, Vice President for Finance and Administration. In addition, Mr. Chairman and members joining us, trustees from our board would be Trustee Don Erlinson, and then also our presidents, Joyce Hester from Normandale College, President Terry Galswick from Minnesota West Community and Technical College, and President Scott Olson from Winona State University, and President Pat Johns from Lake Superior College.
Mr. Beckage, can I interrupt you for just a minute? We don't have a quorum. I'd like to officially call the meeting to order of the Higher Education Policy and Finance Committee. And I'd like to get some housekeeping out of the way. We'll get somebody to make a motion to approve minutes.
So moved.
Representative Heitzman moves that the minutes be approved for March 22nd. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. Okay. Sorry we had to interrupt, but now you can proceed again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In addition to the trustees and the presidents that are here, we also have some students and faculty and staff from many of our colleges and universities. Chair Nornis and members of the committee, on behalf of my colleagues on the board, I would like to make it very clear how much we appreciate the work you did last session. We understand that we are a priority, and we are deeply grateful for your support, and thank you all. Today we plan to describe how our capital and supplemental requests will enable our colleges and universities to meet Minnesota's greatest challenges. In short, we're here to talk about education and jobs. As a quick reminder, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities comprise 30 community and technical colleges, 7 universities on 54 campuses, and in 47 communities around the state. We serve nearly 400,000 students, students still in high school, right out of high school, adult learners, and workers and professionals updating their skills or preparing for new careers. We are Minnesota's largest provider of higher education, continuing education, and customized training. Our colleges and universities are a place of hope and opportunity where all Minnesotans are able to create better futures for themselves, their families, and their communities. And Chair Norris, with your permission, I would like to turn the remainder of the presentation over to Chancellor Stephen Rosenstone.
Welcome, Chancellor Rosenstone. You're up.
Thank you, sir. Proceed. Good afternoon, Chair Norris, members of the committee. Our colleges and universities take great pride in the number of Minnesotans that we serve, not in the number we turn away. Nearly 400,000 students, well, they're not the students of 20 years ago. This year, we're serving 62,000 students of color, 50,000 students who are the first in their family to ever go on to college, 92,000 low-income students, 95,000 of our students are age 25 or older, and over 10,500 of our students this year are veterans or active duty service members. And when we're talking about students in each of these categories, our colleges and universities serve more students than all of Minnesota's other higher education providers combined. Our colleges and universities are absolutely critical to the economic success of Minnesota's regional economies. 9 out of 10 of our students are Minnesotans, and when they graduate, they get jobs in their chosen field, and 80% of them stay right here in Minnesota, either to work or continue their studies. In short, our graduates ensure the economic prosperity of communities in every corner of our state. As members of the committee well know, our colleges and universities have always been focused on preparing our students for careers to ensure that Minnesota has the talent it needs. No matter where I go in the state, in every community, from Owatonna to Detroit Lakes, from Austin to Wilmer, I've heard over and over again about the number one challenge facing businesses in every corner of Minnesota. And that number one challenge is their need for talent. Businesses and communities understand the critical role that our colleges and universities play in making sure we're graduating the talent they need to meet their needs. That's core to our mission. It has been for years. Our colleges and universities provide about 40,000 graduates every single year, but it's simply not enough. If we as a state don't respond to that challenge will grow into a crisis. Businesses, if they can't get the people they need to grow, we have a problem. Some businesses may leave the state. We won't be able to bring others to Minnesota if we don't have the talent they need. Communities across Minnesota will be hurt, and segments of our population will be left behind, condemning them to a life of poverty. Our colleges and universities are the solution to the talent challenge. It's really quite simple. As Chair Vekich put it at the outset, it's about education and jobs. 100% of our capital and supplemental requests, 100% of the projects and programs directly benefit students. These projects are key to ensuring that our colleges and universities can continue to serve Minnesota. To drill down a bit, Chair Nornes, on our bonding request, with your permission, I would like to turn the presentation over to Brian Yolitz, Associate Vice Chancellor of Facilities.
Welcome, Mr. Yolitz, and identify yourself and then proceed.
Certainly, Mr. Chair and Committee. My name is Brian Yolitz, Associate Vice Chancellor of Facilities for the Minnesota State Colleges and University System. The system seeks state financing of $206.3 million to be combined with system financing of $48.2 million to execute a $254.5 million capital program addressing priorities for our colleges and universities to help develop the talent communities across Minnesota need. Our request is about students and about stewardship. Our top priority is asset preservation, taking care of what we have. We seek $110 million to address priority asset preservation needs through HEPR. In addition, there are a set of key priority capital projects that are designed to meet key student success and workforce needs in nearly 20 communities around the state. This request is for projects that directly benefit students, enhancing their success and quality of their education. The bonding books you have provide an overview of our request and can serve as a ready reference to your work. I think everybody's got one in their packet, if I'm not mistaken. As we prepared for this request, we assessed the condition of our existing academic facilities and calculated the backlog of maintenance, meaning the building components and systems that have reached or exceeded their useful lives, to be nearly $750 million. In addition, forecasts estimate that renewal needs for facility maintenance and preservation for the coming 10 years to be nearly $900 million. In total, our 10-year asset preservation need for our academic space, meaning backlog and renewal for the coming 10 years, is over $1.6 billion to keep our colleges and universities warm, safe, and dry. We recognize this need cannot be met all at once, but it needs to be systematically addressed. Our strategy is to catch up by whittling at the backlog while keeping up and addressing the renewal needs as they emerge, repairing components of our systems as they age out. This catch-up, keep-up strategy drives our $110 million request for HEPR as our number one priority and funds the top projects at our colleges and universities and provides improvements at nearly 50 campuses. Our request includes 20 priority capital projects. These projects reflect the Board of Trustees' guidelines of focusing on academic and student needs, minimizing new square footage, then building flexibility into our space that we build or renovate. These guidelines drove the scoring process that engaged nearly 100 experts from the finance, facilities, academics, student affairs, and IT career fields from our colleges and universities that assessed all proposed projects for 2016. This process produced the 20 capital projects before you. Individual project details start on page 10 of your bonding book. They represent the highest priority needs of our colleges and universities. They directly impact students, academic programs, and workforce needs in four areas. Technical and trade programs are enhanced by projects at Century College in White Bear Lake and Matamidi, Hennepin Technical College in Brooklyn Park, Riverland Community College in Albert Lea. Student services and success programs are supported by renovations at M-State and Wandena and Fergus Falls campuses, Hibbing Community College, St. Cloud State University, Normandale College in Bloomington, St. Cloud Technical and Community College, and Minneapolis Community and Technical College. STEM and Allied Health programs are the focus of projects at South Central College in North Mankato, Northland Community College in East Grand Forks, MSU Mankato, and Anoka Ramsey Community College in Coon Rapids. Finally, projects at Bemidji State University, Rochester Community and Technical College, the Education Village at Winona State University, MSU Moorhead, Inver Hills Community College, and here is part of the Twin Cities Metro Area Baccalaureate Access Initiative, our investments in business, education, and liberal arts programs. We're very cognizant of the impact these projects potentially have on campus debt and on student tuition. As many of you know, the system is responsible for one-third of the debt service associated with major design and construction projects. In 2015, the system paid $31.7 million in debt service with tuition and state appropriations. At the college and university level, this represents slightly more than 1% of tuition revenues, meaning just 1% of every tuition dollar went to servicing debt service or general obligation bond funded projects. Said another way, a full-time college student had an estimated $59 of their fiscal year 2015 tuition applied toward debt service, while a similar full-time university student paid $67. The debt associated with the work recommended before you will not change these figures appreciatively. This slide shows how the program touches each one of our institutions in every region of the state. The blue dots are the 31 campuses that would directly benefit from HEPR projects of the $110 million in our request. The larger black dots represent campuses with HEPR work and major capital projects. Together, this program impacts all of Minnesota. To recap, Minnesota State College and University seeks $206.3 million in state funding to be combined with system financing of $48.2 million to deliver on a $254 million capital program. There are many elements to this program, but they are all focused on two simple things: student success and good stewardship. Chair Nornes, I would like to turn over the rest of the presentation back to Chancellor Rosenstone, unless you have any questions.
Before we do that, I want to recognize former Speaker and Minsky Trustee Margaret Anderson Kelleher.
Okay.
Welcome.
Okay.
Transfer Rosenthal's back to you.
Thank you, Chair Norris, members of the committee. Chair Vekic expressed his gratitude for the work you did last session, and I too want to add my sincere thank you. So some of you might be asking yourselves, so if we're so appreciative, why is Minnesota State Colleges and Universities back with a supplemental request? Fair question. Some members of the committee are well aware that as a result of the tremendous drop in the unemployment rate in Minnesota, there are more students at work than on our college campuses, and that's resulted in a dip in enrollment to roughly what it was prior to the Great Recession. There is no question that our colleges and universities have challenges as a result of those enrollment drops. That is not why we are here discussing a supplemental request with you. We are managing those drops ourselves. Our request is about something fundamentally different and fundamentally more important. In the last biennium, we brought to you a request for $142 million, and you and your colleagues in the House and the governor invested $100 million for the biennium in our colleges and universities. We had a one-year tuition increase at our universities, which generated this year approximately $21 million in revenue. $142 million minus 100 minus 21 leaves us with a gap of $21 million. And the only way we can balance the books in this biennium is by making an additional round of cuts. And that has consequences. This is not just a matter of getting a little more efficient. Members of this committee well know from conversations over the last several years that if you look nationally, we are one of the most efficient higher education systems in the nation. At the very bottom of a list of very inefficient systems, high overhead per student, the low overhead per student, we're at the low overhead end of the list. System office is down to 2.1% of the entire system budget, with over half of that expenditure being tied to the IT infrastructure which serves students across the state of Minnesota. And the Campus Service Cooperative, which you've heard about in the past, is generating literally several million dollars of savings every year, which is back on our campuses. We, of course, are on a continual quest for greater efficiency, but given that 76% of all of our expenses are our people serving students, cuts will end up in the form of cuts to people serving students. If fully funded, the $21 million request, 100% of the $21 million request, will go to the campuses. Not a single penny of the $21 million will end up in the system office. The dollars are there to support the people who are preparing people for the jobs of the future, people who are there to help ensure the success of our students. Chair Nornes, I, with your permission, would like to ask Vice Chancellor Laura King to provide a little more detail on the financial challenges that threaten the ability of our colleges and universities to deliver what Minnesota is counting on us to accomplish this biennium.
Thank you. Ms. King, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good afternoon. Let me, if I might, just go back a little bit to some information we spent some time on last year in this committee, and that is to talk about our revenue streams. We have just two of them. And you see on this chart, state support and revenue and tuition are really the only place we have to look for resources. If we add state support and tuition revenue together, you will see two very important long-term trends. First of all, tuition revenue per student has been held down, and state support has recovered since 2012 with your support. But it still remains 22% lower than state support was in 2002 when adjusted for inflation. And the relationship between state support and tuition has significantly changed since 2002. In 2002, state support accounted for 66% of our resources versus 34% from tuition. But by 2013, that relationship has shifted to 40% state support and 60% tuition. While recent reinvestments in higher education by the state have certainly improved that relationship, tuition still remains our primary revenue source. We have raised tuition. We've held spending per FYE nearly flat. Tuition revenue has replaced some but not all of the state reductions over the years. The recent legislative action provided for freezing college tuition in 2016 and reducing it by 1% in 2017. University tuition is frozen in 2017. State support is certainly intended to support both the state's share of our revenue base and the lost tuition, and it almost did. This slide shows the math behind the request that's before you today that the chancellor took you through. And we have presidents with us today and on our campuses all across the state that understand better than anyone what the supplemental request means to their work for students. And it's what keeps them up at night. We were very grateful for the governor's support of our $142 million biennial budget request, and that remains our board's position. And it continues to be our board's position, which is what brings us here to you today with a $21 million supplemental request. With supplemental funds, our colleges and universities will be able to avoid $21 million in cuts that would undermine our ability to deliver on the most important challenges facing the state. Our supplemental request funds the people that make this happen: academic advisors who work with students to map their path to completion, career counselors who work with students to help them understand careers that might not even yet be on their radar, mental health counselors who work with students to help them cope with challenges that students didn't face decades ago, financial aid advisors who work with students to help them find a way to fund their share of their education, and programs and people needed to deliver the talent required for our businesses all across the state. Every president is grappling now with balancing their budget for fiscal 17 and trying to balance those needs against their resources. Joining us today are two of our outstanding presidents and their CFOs. They will share with you their story. And please know that this is the story of every president across our system. Chair Nornes, with your permission, I'd like to turn to our presidents and their CFOs to continue the presentation.
All right. We'll ask them to
thank
come
you very
step
much.
Forward.
We have with us today President Devinder Mahatra from Metropolitan State University and his CFO, Bruce Beiser, and President Hansen from Anoka Technical College and Anoka Ramsey Community College and his CFO, Don Lewis. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't know if you drew numbers to see who's first, but whatever, however that turned out, somebody start.
Okay.
Identify yourself, please, for the record, and then.
Chair Nornes and members of the committee, my name is Devinder Mahatra, and I'm the interim president of Metropolitan State University. Thank you for this opportunity. Metropolitan State University provides undergraduate and graduate programs to 11,500 students across the seven-county metro region. Together with our two-year Minsky College partners, we enroll nearly 130,000 students across the metro region. We meet our students where they are. By design, we are a multi-campus university with four major locations and 25 additional instructional sites, including the campuses of the two-year Minsky colleges, where we offer four-year degrees. Currently, 1,200 students are enrolled in Metropolitan State programs on the two-year campuses where they'll complete their bachelor's degrees. We intend to substantially increase this number in the next 3 years. Geographically dispersed access to an extraordinary affordable education increases the cost of delivery. As we integrate the academic experience of students across the two-year colleges and Metropolitan State, we will also create coordinated student support structures such as staffing one-stop student service centers and expanding technology infrastructure at every stage of our students' academic journey. These efforts increase student retention and success, but they will be in serious jeopardy if our internal reallocations are not augmented by additional state support. Nearly 40% of our students come from either native communities or communities of color. Altogether, over 70% of our students are first-generation college entrants or are from communities of color or are low-income. Given the demographic makeup of our student body, closing the achievement gap is inextricably linked to our success as a university. Higher levels of stopping out and dropping out among these population of students are very often driven by non-academic factors. The scale and scope of services needed by these students vary widely, and our ongoing investments are needed to help these students cross the finish line. One example from last year, we contacted 556 students who had dropped out within a semester or two of finishing their degrees. We sent them each a structured degree completion plan with an offer of small scholarship. 57 students took us up on our offer and enrolled last fall. Almost all of them will graduate within the current academic year. 57 additional graduates within two semesters. Our ability to expand such support programs will be seriously jeopardized without additional state-level financial support. A second example of student support is bringing advisor caseloads down to levels closer to national norms in addition to technology students. These efforts are critical for the success of our students. However, this will also drive up our costs. Now I will ask Bruce Beiser, our interim CFO, who will share some of his thoughts on our strategy and ability to grow.
Welcome, Mr. Beiser.
Thank you, sir. Chair Nornis and members, our ability to grow is partly based on access to facilities that offer students the state-of-the-art preparation they deserve. Our St. Paul campus now includes three new buildings, including a state-of-the-art science education center, which you supported in 2014. And thank you for that. This building enables us to sustain a new heightened focus on science education. This is a regional necessity, since our talent shortages will be even more severe in the STEM fields. Our new science building currently serves more than 2,200 students taking STEM classes and pursuing science degrees. It is a distinguishing feature of our programs that almost half of our current science majors are women, and about a third come from communities of color. We are providing access to high-paying STEM occupations for students from communities who have historically had a relatively low participation rate in STEM fields. Increasing the number of STEM graduates among diverse students is critical to meeting the diverse workforce needs of tomorrow. We have added three science degrees this year and will add another 10 science degree programs next year. They range from neuroscience to cybersecurity to environmental sciences to producing additional science teachers for our urban communities. Without adequate financial support, our progress in building these new programs will be slowed down. As a result of our partnerships with our other Minsky colleges, we have doubled our nursing majors this year, becoming the state's largest producer of baccalaureate nurses. We are expanding our nursing programs, our dental hygiene partnerships, and a nationally recognized advanced dental therapy program, and our capacity to add the additional 2+2 health science programs with our partners. All would be weakened without additional state support. Deepening and enhancing our science infrastructure and programs has positioned us to prepare more teachers of color focused on science education and dedicated to working in diverse urban K-12 schools. However, adequately supporting these students will also require some substantial additional investments. I'll now turn the mic back over to President Malhotra.
Chair Nornis, members of the committee, if our supplemental budget proposal is endorsed by the legislature, Metropolitan State will receive nearly $900,000 in additional state support. In the absence of such support, we are currently cutting our programming by a 2.1% budget reduction. Receiving additional state allocation will go a long way to strategically position us to double the number of graduates from Metropolitan State from 1,900 to 4,000 over the next 5 years. We are eager to accelerate our work in these fields where demand is high and sustained. Sustaining and supporting the success of an increasingly diverse student body is an imperative for meeting the state's talent shortages as we engage in a knowledge-based global economy. Chair Nornis and members, thank you for your support in enabling us to build the workforce of tomorrow.
Thank you, President Malhotra. And we move on now to Anoka.
Chair Nornis, committee members, I'm Kent Hansen for the record, president of Anoka Ramsey Community College and Anoka Technical College. With me, I have Vice President of Finance and Administration, Donald Lewis. Thanks for the opportunity today to talk to you about the supplemental budget impact. I'm going to spend most of my time talking about Anoka Technical College. Some highlights, first of all, for Anoka Ramsey and Anoka Technical College, we have a $400 million impact on our regional economy. So we're very important to our economy, and we serve our students and communities very well, and I'm proud of that. Some highlights for Anoka Technical College. We have a 90% placement rate, so our students, when they get out of the college, they get jobs and support our local manufacturers, healthcare, IT industry, and several other areas. So we're very proud of that. We have very strong relationships with our K-12 partners. I'm very proud of that. I could have them here with me talking about how important this funding is to us. At Anoka Technical College, we have kind of a unique partnership with the school district, with the STEP program. I'm sure maybe you've heard of it, is the Secondary Technical Education Program, which is through the Anoka-Hennepin School District building. It's a career-focused education right on site at Anoka Technical College. This year, we were fortunate enough to work with the school district and bring in the Anoka-Hennepin Technical High School, which is an alternative high school for 18 to 21-year-olds to finish their diploma. They're located right on our campus, and we're very pleased with that partnership. Don and I have both been with colleges here for about 2.5 years. When we first got here, we had about a $1.6 million budget gap to fix out of about an $18 million budget, and so we had to get busy right away. We were able to close that gap. I've been in the system 25 years now, and 17 as an administrator, and unfortunately I'm getting pretty good at balancing budgets, so hopefully we can get a little support to help us along the way. But we're very proud of how we did that. It was a broad-based effort. Our budget committee helped a great deal. It was completely transparent, and I'm proud to announce that we're at least at break-even this year, especially with your support that you've given us. One impact that we have, and I know the Chancellor talked about it, is so we get to a balanced budget, and then we find out enrollment's down 5%. So we have, at Anoka Tech, another $400,000 to find. And so for us, that really turned out to be a big deal, because it was all in the resources that we had intended to reinvest in our college. And so the enrollment challenges are real with a strong economy. The students typically have more tendency to go to work. As I mentioned, we have a balanced budget right now. Moving to the future, focusing on student success is going to continue to be important for us, maybe even improve that placement rate and graduation rate, as well as our placement rate for workforce. So for us, with the funding that will help protect our programs, I'm proud to announce that we closed that $1.6 million budget gap without cutting a single academic program, and that's very important to us as a technical college, because not only is that a great source of revenue for us, it also, if we close programs, it inhibits our ability to serve our workforce community. Lack of funding would cause us to go back to the drawing board and try and find resources to reinvest, to figure out how to serve our students. In that last round of budget reductions, we had about 11 positions that we eliminated, and several of those were directly impacting students, either through tutoring or advising. And there's a pinball effect that occurs when you pull one person out of student affairs, that others have to pick up the slack, and that impacts our students as well. One very important piece at Anoka Technical College that I would like to point out is we are very equipment intensive. Our main programs in manufacturing, healthcare, and IT are very equipment intense. And for us, we have to find a way to invest in equipment. And we're very grateful for the supplemental equipment program, but we need to do more than that. And so for us, it's not only about balancing budget, but how do we reinvest money and make our colleges even better. If we don't receive additional funding, like I said, we'll have to go back to the drawing board. And for us, that means perhaps looking at programs, which again is something that I don't want to do. I feel very strongly about trying to keep all of our programs because they are serving our communities. And then also, we'll have to go back and figure out the old pinball effect and what services are being diminished and how can we enhance what we do with our students. So in closing, at Anoka Technical College, we operate on a very thin margin. And our share of this budget would be about $272,000. Overall, it's about $900,000+ for Anoka Ramsey and Anoka Tech. But that $272,000 for Anoka Technical College is very important to us because we do need to figure out how to reinvest to make sure that we're serving our communities to enhance our relationships with the school districts. And in closing, I would just like to say at Anoka Technical College, we're used to getting by. We can make it work. But I want more for Anoka Technical College. I want Anoka Technical College to thrive. And with your support, I promise you we can do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take a couple of minutes for questions. You have a follow-up in the...
Chair Norris, with your permission, just one final statement. And yeah,
I
welcome
I didn't want to cut it short, but... when you're finished, we'll just open it up for a few minutes for a question, if there are any. Again, we are, in the interest of time, need to get the university up.
We welcome that.
So.
And I just simply want to conclude, Chair Norris, members of the committee, where I began. Our requests are very simple. They're about education and jobs. Our requests are not about computers. They're not about campus administration. And they're certainly not about the system office. They're about the people on our campuses who deliver the programs needed to ensure the success of our students while they're in college and their success when they're out in the workplace. Our request is about protecting the college or university in your community so the right people are on the campus to serve students and make sure that we can deliver the talent that your businesses and community need to prosper. Chair Norris, we look forward to your questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Before we get to the questions, I just wanted to call people's attention, the members of the committee, to page 13. There's a picture there that you may want to notice. Somebody I recognize somehow got into this brochure. Down in the left-hand corner.
Chair Norris, are there two? With your permission, I'd like to point out that I do not see any purple in that picture. Was that an off day?
Bad camera.
That should, I mean, should we applaud?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I think the logo spoke for itself in that picture.
Oh, okay. But handsome guy. I just, anyway. This is bipartisan complimentary time, right? Okay. Representative McDonald, you have a question. Again, we want to keep this discussion as brief as possible. But go ahead.
Very good, Chair. Mr. Chair, thank you. I'll be brief. Ms. King, in your statement and testimony, you said that in regards to the $21 million ask, you needed some of the money for counselors for challenges that students didn't face decades ago. So I'm just curious as what students' challenges that they face today that they didn't decades ago.
Mr. Chair, Representative, one of the things that's noteworthy about our students is how different than they are from the students of decades ago. They're not 18 years old. They generally don't live at home or in a dorm. They're substantially adults. They're substantially heads of household, living in family situations. Quite often they're working part-time as well as attending school. So they have a much more complicated life to be successful in school while they also are working and raising a family. And that's different from 20 years ago when many of us were in college. College students were 18 and 19 year olds. And so the population is quite different.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Ms. King. I can identify with that. I recognize that. So how does that translate to more monies needed for that demographics?
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, it translates really across the spectrum. It translates into how we program from a course availability and scheduling standpoint. It translates into services, whether it's advising services for career planning, curriculum planning. It translates into what we've seen in the last few years, which is a growing need for student services outside the classroom, whether it's financial advising or family support advising. There's a whole growth of services to help students be successful that really are delivered by people, whether it's faculty members or advisors or counselors. It translates into people for us.
Chair Nornis, if I might, with your permission, over the last decade, our students have moved from roughly 23% Pell eligible to 36% Pell eligible. Many of our students, as you know, come to us underprepared for college-level work. We need to ensure the success of every one of those students. We're dealt a little tougher hand than many other institutions who decide they're only going to accept students with 28 or 29 or 31 ACTs. Our students face real challenges, financial challenges, as well as academic challenges. For them to be successful, they need the extra help that's provided both in and outside of the classroom. From the state's point of view, we cannot afford to leave those students behind. We cannot afford to leave anyone behind if we're going to have the talent we need for businesses and communities to grow. And another way of thinking about it is, if we leave those people behind and they are not prepared for the jobs of the future, they will be condemned to a life of poverty. They will fail. Minnesota will fail. Communities will fail. They need the extra help to be successful. And there's been a huge change over the last decade in the hand that we're dealt, in the struggle that our students are facing to be successful. We want to make sure we have the resources necessary for their success.
Right, thank you. I think that's going to probably conclude your presentation. We appreciate all of the testifiers and the information. It's very well done.
Thank you very much.
Chair Nornis, thank you. Thank you, members of the committee.
All right, thank you. Now, we need the university to step forward. President Kaler and... Wait till you're up on the screen.
Put a lot of effort on these slides. So.
We're not rushed for time, so just...
All right, Chair Norman, we will reflect on the fact that Bill Gates is one of the richest men in the world.
Just kind of shows an older breakdown of each campus.
Where is he when he...
Any of our committee members in this slide presentation? Not.
Mr. Chair, I actually could begin with some remarks that are not critically depending upon the slide.
President Kaler, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Eric Kaler. It's my honor to serve as president of the University of Minnesota, and I'm joined at the presenting table by Vice President for University Services, Pam Wheelock, and as needed, the Vice President for Finance, Richard Fitzenreiter. First, let me begin with thanks. I thank you sincerely for the strong support this committee and the legislature has provided to the university in the past. For example, the bonding bill last year included $26.5 million for the University of Minnesota Veterinary Isolation Laboratories and the Minnesota Poultry Testing Laboratory in Willmar. Each one of those projects is moving forward, and we're extremely grateful for your leadership and support of these projects as they are both critical to our mission and to our shared statewide priorities. I also appreciate that many of you toured our campuses this summer and fall and witnessed up close and personal why we are requesting what we are requesting. Thank you for investing your time and your attention to do that, and I appreciate this opportunity to show and tell you, eventually show you, how our capital request before you aligns with my vision for the University of Minnesota. But first, please allow me to step back for a moment or two to share with you just how vibrant, dynamic, and transformative the University of Minnesota is to our state and its citizens. For example, we launched nearly 16,000 new graduates from bachelor's to master's to PhDs to MDs every year from our five campuses in Crookston, Duluth, Morris, Rochester, and the Twin Cities, delivering some of the state's best and brightest young people into the workforce, from engineers to English teachers, from local business people to nurse practitioners. Just this month, the Higher Learning Commission, which evaluates and accredits the nation's colleges and universities, offered glowing reviews to our Crookston, Rochester, and Twin Cities campuses. The Higher Learning Commission concluded that the university is firmly committed to continuous improvement and went on to say that since its last comprehensive evaluation of the Twin Cities campus a decade ago, and I quote, the university has made great strides in the areas of student success, sponsored research, and community engagement. We set a new record this year on startup companies. 16 new enterprises grew out of faculty research. We are one of only 9 public research universities in the nation to be ranked by the authoritative Center for Measuring University Performance at Arizona State University in the top 25 of every stringent metric they study, from faculty honors, the size of the endowment, to research activity. In addition, Standard & Poor's reaffirmed our AA credit rating and changed their outlook from negative to neutral, and Moody's returned a equivalent AA1 credit rating to the university. Our public engagement and outreach through extension in all 87 counties, through our research and outreach centers, and through our day-to-day faculty and student activity is addressing nutrition throughout Greater Minnesota, the achievement gap in the Twin Cities, and the future of mining in Northeast Minnesota. We helped our agriculture producers fight the avian flu. We're working on treatments and cures for Alzheimer's and diabetes, and our students made the news recently for designing special backpacks for children with autism. Our graduation rates, number of applications, and ACT scores are up. I mentioned already our bond rating, and I forgot to quote from them, very strong, reflecting stable enrollment and robust demand with a very good selectivity and student quality. And of course, our Gopher women's ice hockey team won its unprecedented 7th national title on Sunday. That got a round of applause.
That should have round of applause. President Kaler, I thought I heard where that's going to be televised on a delay basis.
Chair Dornis, we are in robust discussions with the NCAA about ownership of that particular video feed. I do believe it is available online and will be delayed, but we need to see it live and in real time.
Yeah, and I only brought it up because it's good they won, because then you'll want to see it.
Yeah, that's true. So. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as we proceed through today's hearing about our bonding request and then about our supplemental budget request, I hope you will all keep in mind everything the university does on all of our campuses every single day to improve, enhance, and benefit the lives, culture, spirit, and future of Minnesota. And I hope you will see how our requests build on our momentum and upward trajectory and also directly respond to your goals and my priorities for the university. My priorities for the university are as follows. First, for us to be fiscally responsible and thoughtful stewards of our assets. Secondly, to be one of the state's most ambitious job creators in the healthcare and STEM fields. Thirdly, to be fiercely committed to our land grant and research missions to tackle and solve some of the state's most pressing needs and challenges. You have the details of our request in your packet, and you also have the impact of our university in each of your districts.
President McKittle, I think we're close to having your slides.
That is exciting. Very good.
We just, here we are. Here we are.
All right.
Well, all right. Didn't want to interrupt, but now we're synced.
Thank you. Thank you. There we go. Four themes run through our request and are key components of our vision. The priorities are promoting asset renewal. Secondly, creating modern learning spaces for our students. Third, investing in our health sciences to help keep our state healthy. And finally, driving the state's STEM strength. Those themes reflect not only the university's priorities, but also meet many of the priorities you've asked us to focus on, particularly your strong interest in growing STEM degrees. Plus, our request has a statewide impact, and all of its components add up to some of the biggest needs for our students and faculty across our five campuses. And let's start with the asset renewal priority. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, imagine you have a perfectly nice pickup truck. It needs a brake job and new tires. Do you drive down and trade it in for a new car? No, you don't. You fix it. And we must do the same thing at the University of Minnesota. We have 29 million square feet of space, and it needs to be maintained and fixed so that it remains relevant and useful to our community. And that's where HEPR comes in. HEPR is so important to the facilities that our students and faculty use every day, and why your full funding of our HEPR request is my number one priority. Over decades, the state has made significant, tremendous investments in our infrastructure. But at some point, structural systems need to be replaced, asbestos removed, Americans with Disability Act needs addressed, and the daily wear and tear on plumbing, electrical, doors, windows, and roofs confronted. Our needs are great. We have a list in your packet of 95 separate items, from septic systems to fire alarms. Much of the benefit of a HEPR expenditure, however, arises because of the savings of additional maintenance further down the road. There's an industry metric that says for every dollar invested in stewardship, you avoid $3 in future capital renewal investment. In other words, a $100 million HEPR investment at the University of Minnesota will save us $300 million over time. Extending the useful life of an investment is always more economical than replacing it with a new building. Let me tell you a story that illustrates our HEPR use, and that's the partial renovation in 2012 of the 100-year-old building Lind Hall, which was once our main engineering building. The goal was to vastly improve career and student service offices, computer labs, and meeting rooms for our many student groups, ranging from Engineers Without Borders to the Society of Women Engineers. We raised money to do that renovation predominantly from donors. But we discovered structural issues that had existed since the building was constructed in 1912. With $900,000 of HEPR funds from the legislature, we were able to fix the core ailment in Lind Hall, and that enabled us to raise more than $4 million in generous donations from General Mills, 3M, Boston Scientific, Schlumberger, and 130 individuals to transform the building into one of the most popular on campus. Hundreds of students use this revitalized facility every day. As I mentioned, the growth of STEM programs is a performance metric established by this legislature, and HEPR moves that and other essential initiatives forward. The asset renewal theme is linked to our request too for support of academic and student experience investments on our Crookston, Morris, Duluth, and Twin Cities campuses. We want to take obsolete spaces and simply transform them into modern, technology-rich classrooms, classrooms for the students of today and tomorrow, who use Twitter as often as a textbook, who are learning better through interactive classrooms, through pop-up discussions with professors and classmates, and who prefer working with each other in groups. Our request for renovating Pillsbury Hall on our East Bank campus is a prime example of both asset renewal and student experience investment, and it deepens our commitment to the humanities, particularly our English department. Many employers are demanding tech-savvy, critically thinking communicators who can see problems from all angles and work with people from many cultures. Pillsbury Hall, which is the university's second oldest building, will be the hub for those students and faculty members. Pillsbury Hall is absolutely my favorite building on the East Bank campus, and it's majestic. But it's worn out and tired after more than a century as a science building and with only one set of restrooms. Apparently, they weren't so important in 1889. Our goal is to create a space for 6,000 students in our College of Liberal Arts, the largest college on our Twin Cities campus. Pillsbury Hall has a story that represents a turning point in the history of our university. In 1889, former Governor John S. Pillsbury donated $150,000, which is about $4 million today. And he was intent on building a complete science hall and a complete university, which, in retrospect, paved the way for the broad, interdisciplinary, top-ranked research university that we are today. Let's turn now to our request and the strategic commitment to health sciences and STEM education. Our medical school and all of our health sciences are central to the health of Minnesotans, as we train 6,200 health science students every year and supply about 70% of all of the health professionals practicing in the state. We are known nationally for our interprofessional approach to health science education, training physicians, nurses, physical therapists, dentists, and other providers together with a patient-centered and team-based approach. This new health science education facility will help recruit and retain the best students and faculty. As you know, as a result of Governor Dayton's Blue Ribbon Commission and with the support of the legislature, the state invested $30 million in the medical school recurring in 2015. One of my top priorities as president has been to move the medical school back to where it belongs, among the nation's top ranked, and to improve our patient care and training. Today, as Minnesotans live longer, as demand for care of an aging population increases, and as disparities unfortunately persist in access and in the state's healthcare workforce, healthcare requires an interdisciplinary approach to delivery along a full continuum from primary to advanced care. This health sciences educational facility will be a centerpiece and go a long way to drive the momentum we're now experiencing in our academic health center. Our request for the chemistry and advanced materials science building on UMD's campus and funding for our plant growth research facility on the St. Paul campus further relates to our STEM priority. UMD's current chemistry building is 70 years old. It's a virtual antique in its ability to handle 21st century chemistry. Interest in chemistry at UMD is exploding with classes at capacity, and that creates a bottleneck in our pipeline that needs to flow for the economy of Northeast Minnesota. We propose construction on the UMD campus of a state-of-the-art laboratory to support our students, to attract top faculty, and to partner with local industries and employers. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm a chemical engineer, and believe me, you cannot do your chemistry lab project at home in your kitchen, or at least you shouldn't. And you certainly cannot do them online. We need a place where trained professors, skilled technicians, and safe laboratory experiments can be carried out. Our students and faculty truly need a new chemistry and advanced material science building at UMD. Finally, our capital request seeks your support for the new plant growth research facility on the St. Paul campus. Our current faculty, as some of you have seen, has windows that are falling out, a foundation that's sagging, and the rare plants there are in danger. Among those rare plants is the famous stinky corpse flower, which was in the news last month with about 6,000 people coming to the greenhouse to smell the flower. Our plant and biological science programs are expected to increase by more than 40% in coming years as students' passion turns to one of the identifiable grand challenges, feeding a hungry world sustainably. We are an agricultural state in which 1 in 5 jobs relates to food. And that chain all begins with plants and crops and the research we conduct around them and for which we are known around the world. To wrap up, our capital request demonstrates our commitment to being good stewards of all our campuses, preserves and revitalizes precious and historic assets, seeks to invest in critically thinking students who will emerge as community leaders, understanding our world from all perspectives. And finally, it focuses on preparing our students for the STEM jobs of today and tomorrow, while keeping Minnesotans healthy and our healthcare delivery system poised for decades of progressive patient care. Mr. Chair, I can stop there for questions, or I can proceed with our supplemental budget, if you would prefer.
President Kaler is just going to point out that I understand the science building project in Duluth is ready to break ground this spring if funding is available.
Chair Nornes, members of the committee, I will defer to Vice President Wheelock, but we have had planning money for that project.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Pam Wheelock, University Services, University of Minnesota. We did receive from the state previously some funds to begin the planning. We are actually moving that forward aggressively and would be ready to move forward with the construction soon after the appropriations are finalized.
Any other questions from members before we move on to... I see none. Oh, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for President Kaler regarding your alumni and the donations. I see that Bremer Bank made a very generous donation and several others on the website, the alumni website. Just wondering, are alumni allowed to make a sizable or a donation that for asset preservation? And have they in the past year or continue to do for your projects upcoming?
President Kaler.
Chair Nornes, Representative McDonald. Asset preservation projects are, to use the vernacular, not very sexy. So they are difficult to sell to donors. We have a fairly successful process of encouraging donors to donate to new construction or to substantial renovation, particularly when that creates a naming opportunity. But to donate to the bread and butter keeper kinds of projects, it's hard for us to find people willing to do that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. And then what was the, I couldn't find it on the alumni page, but total donations for, if you had that information, or sure, if you can share that for 2015.
President Kaler.
Chair Nornes, Representative McDonald. The University of Minnesota had a record year in donations last year. We raised $351 million from 78,000 donors.
All right. Very good.
Very good.
I think at this point we can proceed with Fritz. Fritz Reiter.
Thank you.
Or not.
Chair,
I don't know who's
Nornes. No, I'm
my President Kaler.
You go ahead. My training wheels on. We're going to see if I can do all of these for you today. I would, to Representative McDonald's point, mention that one of those donations was a $25 million donation from the Minnesota Masonic Charities, which was used to help construct the new ambulatory care center, which is just opened near the university. So let me turn, Mr. Chair, to our supplemental budget request. We have developed this request in a targeted way with statewide impact and an addressing of immediate needs. We're seeking $19 million in one-time money to improve cybersecurity to protect our students, faculty, and staff system-wide and our business operations. Technology helps to run our university with more than 60,000 highly tech-centered students, more than 25,000 employees, and thousands more prospective students and their families accessing our network every day. That's a top priority for us. It is part of an overall larger network upgrade. This $19 million would address the cybersecurity portion of that for our system. Secondly, we are seeking $3.6 million on a recurring basis for Mining Innovation Minnesota, an initiative to revitalize our state's mining region. It's a region and an industry that we have been so instrumental in advocating for over the years, and for which our research, including the taconite process, has contributed in a major way. To keep Minnesota healthy, we're seeking a $3.25 million recurring investment and a one-time $2.5 million state investment in our community university healthcare clinic and rural dentist associate program, which supports training sites in underserved Minnesota communities. The community university healthcare clinic, COOC for short, educates more than 230 academic health center students each year. And we are seeking $10.5 million on a recurring basis to restore two critical healthcare programs formerly supported by UCARE, which lost its funding from the state. And these dollars will support family medicine clinical training in Duluth, Mankato, and the Twin Cities, and our traveling mobile dental clinic. So, Mr. Chair, in closing, please allow me to point out, in your 17 House districts combined here today, we have more than 5,000 students who are your constituents on our five campuses. You have about 1,500 university employees living in your district, and there's a grand total of 33,351 alumni in your district. Districts who have earned nearly 43,000 degrees, many of them professional or advanced. Their lives and the lives of their families were transformed because of the impact of the University of Minnesota. And they know that a strong university equals a prosperous Minnesota. Your support of our capital and supplemental budget requests will help make our university even stronger and our state even more prosperous. Thank you for your attention. I have with me two colleagues, Professor Linda Beringer and student Nick Wilson, who would like to offer testimony. We can do that now, or I can stand for your questions.
Well, we'll see if there are any questions for you at this time. If not, we'll move forward with Professor. I was just thinking, when you talked about mining, I heard today that there was a train load of taconite that just came to Duluth, and it's loading on a ship that'll be the first ship loaded with taconite to leave Duluth probably in some time. So that's a positive sign, I think, for that
very,
part of the state.
Very, very good news.
Yeah. Okay, who was first here? Please identify yourself for the record, then proceed.
Yes, Chair Dornis. I am Linda Beringer, faculty at the University of Minnesota. Chair Dornis and members of the committee, good afternoon, and thank you for this opportunity to speak with you about the university's capital request from a faculty's perspective. As I said, I'm Lynn Beringer. I'm a professor at the university with appointments in nursing, medicine, and public health. And for the past three decades, my teaching and my research focus has been on the health of young people, how we can raise responsible and resourceful children, particularly those living in challenging environments. With faculty and colleagues, I've partnered with clinics, public health agencies, middle schools, high schools, and after-school programs all over our state. And I've taught hundreds of health providers in the past 30 years in medicine, nursing, nutrition, psychology, public health, and social work, and they now work in every corner of the state. I was born and raised in Minnesota, and like many of you, I'm an alum of the university, graduating with a PhD in educational psychology. It's a field where the focus is on the ways in which people can most effectively learn. So let me pose a question to you. How might we define success of a professor or a faculty at the University of Minnesota? I think success looks like this. First, it means students being taught and curriculum being structured to create what we call participatory learning. It's a type of teaching that we now understand helps students learn the best. Imagine students working in groups in a single classroom or in multiple classrooms through interactive technology, like I've done simultaneously with graduate students in Duluth and Rochester while sitting in a classroom of graduate students in the Twin Cities. This contrasts with the classic portrayal of a professor in a large auditorium lecturing to students who are passively taking notes. And here's another description of success at the university. Success that's beyond the classroom. Success means that students are engaged with faculty in research projects and creative work, whether in clinics in Duluth, Mankato Elementary Schools, in floating labs on Lake Superior, or with mine workers in Hibbing or forestry workers in the Boundary Waters. When our research can also serve as a platform for mentoring and educating students, we are truly optimizing the capacity of being a research one institution. We're fulfilling our mission of making new discoveries while at the same time educating the next generation of thinkers and artists and scholars and scientists. Chair Nornis, Representatives, you've already heard from President Kaler about the priorities and details of the university's capital and supplemental request. Now speaking as a professor with 30 years of teaching and research experience, this is what I hear in the request. I see at the request the resources it will take to move more of our 29 million square feet of property into spaces in which faculty can use state-of-the-art teaching strategies. I see antiquated and, in some buildings, unsafe laboratories being transformed into interactive teaching spaces where students can practice skills and work side by side with faculty conducting research, whether it's in water quality, land management, or new prevention and treatment approaches. These are the kinds of classrooms, study areas, and lab settings that attract top quality undergraduate and graduate students, premier scientists, and inspiring faculty to our campuses. I'd like to take a moment to share a personal story of how the university has been transformative in my life, and I'm certain in the lives of thousands of women in Minnesota over the last decade. Chair Nornis and members of the committee, 1 year ago, almost to the day, I was sitting on a Senate higher ed committee listening to a professor from the medical school talking about the advances and discoveries in antibody research in breast cancer. At that moment, I was interrupted by a call from my doctor who told me that my breast biopsy, done the day before, showed that I had cancer. And it was a particularly aggressive type of cancer. It was a surreal moment here at the Capitol as I sat on the south steps trying to absorb what I had just heard. Over the past year, I've received 17 infusions, changed hair color, and of the exact type of antibody developed and tested through randomized clinical trials at the University of Minnesota. And it was the same antibody described last March at the Senate hearing. Today, 1 year after beginning treatment, I am cancer-free. I'm deeply grateful for the medical school's research and development that has made this possible. I know that with President Kaler's priorities that he's laid out and the partnerships we have with the state and the high quality graduates of our university, there will be tens of thousands more who will be able to tell stories like this. Thank you for your continued support of the university, its faculty, and its students. We seek to be good stewards of that support, and I appreciate this opportunity to speak to you again today. Thank you.
Thank you. One more, identify yourself for us too, and then proceed.
Thank you, Chair Nornis. Members of the committee, my name is Nicholas Wilson. I'm a junior majoring in journalism and minoring in political science on the University of Minnesota's Twin Cities campus. My hometown is Greenbush, Minnesota in Roseau County, population of approximately 700, or I would guess fewer people than lived in Centennial Hall, my freshman dormitory, just to put that into a little perspective for you. Clearly, my move to the Twin Cities and the University of Minnesota has had a profound impact on me. Growing up in Greenbush, the university was a common topic in our community. I come from a family farm, and the University of Minnesota Crookston was at the forefront of agricultural research in our area. My family farm directly benefited from the research conducted by the Crookston campus. The variety trial research on spring wheat, soybeans, barley, and various developing crop varieties made my farm and those of many farms in northwest Minnesota more successful. Soil fertility and insect pressure research have also had a significant positive impact. The influence the U had on my childhood and high school years did not end with the Crookston campus. Many of my older friends went on to study at the University of Minnesota Morris in Duluth, majoring in teaching mathematics and biology. My sister graduated from the Carlson School on the Twin Cities campus just 2 years before I decided. Well, my time studying at the university has afforded me opportunities I hadn't thought were possible until well within my career. I've learned about diverse cultures, found practical applications for things like ethics, advocacy, and representation, among much more. As the executive director of the Association of Big Ten Students, I'm an elected representative serving 500,000 students nationwide. As the executive director of the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition, I'm an elected representative serving 63,000 Minnesota students across all five university campuses. The resounding concern I hear from my peers is the costly and ever-rising price of education. And that's why I'm so thankful to you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, and all of your colleagues here in the legislature for partnering with President Kaler in freezing tuition 2 years ago and so minimizing debt for so many of our students. And I'm also grateful to you, Mr. Chair, and members, for the support you've given the university to improve mission-critical infrastructure and state-of-the-art teaching facilities in the past. Almost all of the items in the university's request that President Kaler reviewed for you just a few minutes ago will deeply impact the student experience. In particular, I'm thinking of one HEBA repair, and that's the Washington Avenue pedestrian enclosure renewal. The bridge, of course, is one of the more iconic structures on the Twin Cities campus, and I and thousands of other students walk across it at least 4 times a week, give or take. I recently walked across it with a friend of mine a few days back, and we noticed numerous cracks, holes, rusty doors, and walls. Many question whether the structure is fully sound, so believe me when I say it's in need of great repair. As someone who represents students on all of our campuses, I know how important the Chemistry and Advanced Material Science building is to my fellow students on our Duluth campus. They've told me that the existing chemistry building is lacking in efficient space and up-to-date equipment. The building is nearly 70 years old and is not a modern chemistry facility. I know that the university is critical to developing the state's healthcare workforce, and as the proposed health sciences education facility will drive that pipeline. As a student in the College of Liberal Arts, the rebirth of Pillsbury Hall will be a powerful statement about the importance of the humanities to all of our students. CLA is the largest college in the system and is the hub of critical thinking, which I know is a skill of each of you here in the legislature. Now, in the university's supplemental requests, I can't emphasize enough the importance of upgrading cybersecurity across the system for all of our students on all of our campuses. Our work, all of the work and research of our professors, and all of the business records of the university can't be vulnerable to hackers and other mischief. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what's before you today are officially called the university's capital requests and supplemental budget requests, but these are fundamentally student experience requests. Your investments are all about supporting and advancing the quality of the experience students, just like me, receive every day on our Crookston, Duluth, Morris, Rochester, and Twin Cities campuses. Even more importantly, your investments will enhance the experience of thousands more students from places like Greenbush in the years and decades to come. Thank you so much for this opportunity to speak with you today and for your support of the University of Minnesota and its students.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And I was going to ask how many people have ever been to Greenbush. I know where it is. Yeah. All right. That's just not that important, I guess, but it's up north. So.
Sure is. My representative quips that he represents southern Manitoba and eastern North Dakota.
That pretty well tells where it's at, yeah. President Kaler?
Thank you, Chair Nornes. What we've tried to present for you as quickly as possible today, I think, is a compelling argument for investment in infrastructure at the University of Minnesota, for investment in the student experience, for investment in our research enterprise, and for investment in our health care activities. I hope you view these well, and we will be delighted to provide you additional information or answer questions as the session proceeds. Thank you.
We appreciate the information. Any members have questions? You've done well, and I think this committee, I can speak maybe for them, that we're really positive about higher education, and I think we can do to help. And some of this is going to depend on other people getting together to decide where we're going from here for bonding and supplemental and all the rest of it. We're working hard on those two areas, and we'll do the best we can for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative McDonald.
Well, just one question, since nobody else had one at the time. Just curious, President Kaler, if we're not sure what kind of supplemental budget there will be. Of course, the governor has dismissed his shared up with us his supplemental budget, but we haven't really determined exactly what ours will be, and if at all. So what are the plans if one is not to the ask that you are asking? What's the
Chair Nornes, Representative McDonald, obviously some of these things will not get done. Our Department of Family Medicine will not be as strong as it is now. There will not be as many residency slots as there is now. The availability of dental care in greater Minnesota will not be what it could be. The mining industry will not be able to make the advances we believe we can fund. We will have to find other ways with university resources to rebuild our cybersecurity, and those are dollars that are mission critical and must be done, but would take away from other activities that might be perceived as being more student focused. And Mr. Chair, if I may, Dr. Mac Baird is here. He's the director, chair of the Department of Family Medicine. Okay. And if you would indulge him, you could make some comments about the Healthy Minnesota Initiative.
Sure. Go ahead. Just tell us your name and then proceed.
Yes. My name is Mac Baird. I'm the professor and chair of family medicine and community health at the University of Minnesota. And I have 3 degrees from the University of Minnesota and grew up in southern Minnesota in a small town. And Representative McDonald, one of the things that would happen to the family medicine residencies across the state, we're the academic sponsor of 8 of them, is that they wouldn't collapse immediately. I wish I could sort of declare that there was a fire burning. But what happens is, over time, they dwindle. The faculty take more highly paid jobs. The residents perceive that the state isn't committed to such programs. They choose other programs in which to enter all over the country. And over time, both small towns and urban centers don't have the 58 graduates per year that we put into family medicine practices around the state. The state has declared it saved $1 billion on healthcare homes over the past 5 years. About 70% of those healthcare homes are populated by family physicians and teams of other physicians, so that it would have a gradually negative effect, but it takes time to show.
Okay, thank you.
And we're grateful for the past support we've had.
All right. Any final word to President Kaler? We've really moved along good today, and information has been good and concise, and
we'll give the gift of time, Mr. Chair.
I don't know if it's appropriate to ask, but you were talking today about the search for an athletic director. Could we just spend 60 seconds on where that's at? Members might be interested.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we can certainly do that. I announced today the formation of a search committee for the athletics director. It's a little bit larger than I had originally envisioned. Excuse me. But it does represent important constituencies with an interest in Gopher Athletics. There are 9 individuals not affiliated with the university. I won't name them all, but I will mention the 2 Kevins, Kevin Couture, who was formerly executive vice president of the Minnesota Twins, and Kevin Warren, who is the chief operating officer of the Vikings. So we're bringing a professional sports experience to bear. There are 7 members of the university community, including a student athlete. The search is chaired by Catrice Albert, who's the Vice President for Equity and Diversity, and Perry Leo, who is a professor of aerospace engineering and a faculty athletic representative. These are experienced folks, and I'm looking forward to their work together with a search firm we've retained called Turnkey, and we will look for, find, recruit, and hire the best person possible to run Gopher Athletics.
Is there an anticipated timeline?
I anticipate the committee being active in April, in March into April, probably interviews in the May time frame, and identification of a finalist and an announcement in the May-June time frame, with a target date for that person to begin at July 1.
Okay. Well, thank you. Since there are no further questions, I think we have come to the end of our committee. So thank you very much for being here, and we are dismissed.